Hello, would you please tell me your full name, the date, the time, and your location?
Sherilyn Holloway, July 12th, 2022, 1:34 p.m. Eastern Time, and I am in Elyria, Ohio.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license, attribution, non-commercial, share alike?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I'd like to just start by asking you to introduce yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this.
Sure. So again, I'm Sherilyn Holloway. I am the founder and current president of Pro Black, Pro Life. We were created in 2020 after the George Floyd murder, where I just felt like kind of an outsider in the pro-life movement because I had just this deep appreciation for racial justice work and also a deep appreciation for life in general, no matter where it was located. And the two just never seemed to match. And so I created it out of just hoping that this I could have a space where other people that may be out there that felt the same way could join. And so we've been around for now 2 years, and we focus on education as well as messaging and understanding the history of racial inequality, the history of systemic racism, and how that equates to every aspect of the Black community's lives.
Would you tell me a story about your life during the pandemic?
I just told it. During this pandemic, I had just taken a job at a pro-life marketing company. Not too long ago, before that, I had left my job as executive director at our local pregnancy center. And just was ready just to have a job that I could show up and clock in, clock out, get a check, be happy about it. My husband had just bought a cricket. So he was like making all types of things. And I always said, I'm pro-black and I'm pro-life. And you got to kind of like take me as I am. And so he thought that was like a really cool saying. One of the things he was going to do was like put it on a shirt for me. Like that was his practice. And so I had this on my shirt, and we were remote. So it wasn't like we went remote when the pandemic happened. My job was already remote. And so I didn't have this like huge transition of working from, outside and coming home. It was a transition of like working from home in peace and quiet to working from home with like a million people here all the time. But anyway, I was wearing a shirt one day, and the president of the company says, "Hey, when you want to do something with that, let me know." And so again, this is March, this is like early May. And I was like, I don't want to do anything with this. Like, it's a t-shirt. Like, I don't want to lead anything. I don't want to start anything. Like, my brain just is like, no. I'm tired. And she's like, okay. May 28th. And here we are. So my pandemic story is that Pro Black, Pro Life was built out of a pandemic that I really didn't feel like I was too affected by at the time.
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
Do I remember when I first heard about it? No, because I'm not a news watcher. What's funny is that I was a long-term sub before. So the went like going into the holidays, so October to December in 2019, I was long-term sub for a teacher in my home district. And let me tell you something, from November to that we got out, we were at like 27% because these kids were getting sick and with these respiratory issues, and no one had any clue what it was. And they were out for 2 to 3 weeks. So my classes, which were normally 17, 18 students, would have six students. Seven students, literally for 2 months. And the
And
kids would come.
was that November 2019?
Yep, 2019. And so I was like, what was it, the flu? They were like, no, they don't know what it was. They kept saying it was respiratory. I just remember asking them. And my son, then over Christmas break, got really, really sick. It's terrible cough. I mean, and he's a like strong kid who like will push through. He was like out of the game. And we were like, gosh, that was weird. So when it came up, that's when I thought about it. I was like, oh, that's what was going on. But between that, between the shutdown, like when they shut it down and before that, I had never even heard of it because I don't watch the news. I don't really listen to the radio.
What was it like starting up an organization while so many structures were being put on hold and other things were happening?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was going to be. So luckily, the company I worked for really allowed me to like put it under their wing as we developed it. You know, they were a marketing company, so they built the website, built the social media presence. And now at this point in time, there is a strong social media presence. And I started a YouTube channel. I felt like I was supposed to start a YouTube channel. And again, everybody's at home. Like, I didn't start watching YouTube till the pandemic. Like, I would look at my kids like they were crazy. Like, you just watch YouTube? Like you just watching short videos? All they're like, yeah. And I'm like, that's weird. But then when we're stuck at home now and there's nothing to watch, I'm like, let's see what this YouTube thing's about. Now I was watching YouTube all the time. So I started that as a way to communicate, like, what we were doing, what we were about. So for me, we weren't like seeking donations or like any, you know, anything like that. We were just trying to get our name out there and for people to know who we were.
Could you share a bit about how you learned about the murder of George Floyd and then what happened for you after?
Facebook. And I'm not a person, like, I can't watch fighting videos. I can't watch any of the videos, like, I can't watch them. I am the girl who can't watch a scary movie because in my brain, even if it's totally fake, my brain will twist it into something like, well, that might be not ever happen, but what about this? So I can't, like, it just can't come into my brain. But I knew just based off of like talking, my husband watched it, like what had happened. And people were calling me. People who would have said the day before that racism was just something that the media portrayed were calling me and saying, like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I can't unsee this, and I don't know what to do with this information. Like, what do I do with this? And so I became more involved from that aspect of, like, helping people, you know, work through. And these are, like, this is, like, the Black community. This is not just, like, you know, my white friends, or this is like the people who in the Black community that just had kind of detached themselves from, you know, racial justice, just calling and saying, I don't know what to do with this. And then, you know, later on, some of my white friends, you know, were swinging around and saying, I really want to be able to make a difference in my workplace. How do I make the most tangible difference?
What are some of the things you said to support people in the culture?
Number one, that you don't have to do anything, you know, like, you recognize that it's happening. Like, I think that that's the biggest, you know, specifically for friends who felt like racial justice was like this something people just use to get their way, you know, that this is a good time to recognize that it actually happens, and that it's, you know, what we're hearing about is true, that racism we're not so detached from it that, you know, in our lifetime, that we don't see horrible things come from it. And really, to, you know, my white friends, I just told them, you know, the biggest thing you can do is check people's language and things that they say, because I feel like you can be in white spaces and people say things that, you know, are off-colored or like inappropriate. And because you don't want to like be uncomfortable or be that person who like ruins the good mood, that you don't say anything. Like, you got to put that aside. Like, you got to correct things when they happen, you know, let people know, like, it's not okay for you to talk like that around me. And if it kills the vibe, oh, well, you know, but you may not be the only person who felt like that. You may have other people like, yeah, you know what, I feel the same way, who also were afraid. And also as moms, you know, I have a lot of friends who are stay-at-home moms. I say, you know, if you hear other people's kids say things to your kids that you guys don't agree with, you are allowed to say, hey, we don't talk like that in our house. And I said, and then, you know, you go over and have a conversation with the mom and say, like, you know, Billy said this, you know, and this is what I told Billy. And so if this is the way you guys talk here, you know, Billy can't talk like that in my house. So there may be a reevaluation of whether or not they can play together. You know what I mean? And so, and I said, I was like, I know that's scary because we're all mama bears, right? But if my child said something inappropriate, I would want to know about it. Even if it's not, something I hear and I'm not offended by it, right? Like, they may have heard it from me. And and I didn't know it was offensive. And so I want to be willing to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't even know that that would be offensive to somebody. Like, she heard it from me. She's also got 7 siblings, all older than her, you know? And so I would want that because I don't want to raise a child that's insensitive, or feels like, you know, and people are like, oh, well, they've always got to like walk on eggshells. I don't feel like being kind and being intentional with other people is walking on eggshells. You know, I was in college before I learned that you're supposed to like not say everything that comes to your mind. Because in my household, we just said whatever came to our mind. and I grew up where I grew up. We're very sarcastic. Like a little small town of Oberlin, Ohio is extremely sarcastic. And we all get each other's, you know, sarcasm from a very, very early age. but that's not universal. And so like going to college and realizing like, oh, like you didn't get the joke. Like you thought I was serious or they like that. Yeah, it's not funny. And I'm like, it was kind of funny, but I get it now. Like you don't appreciate sarcasm. I got to not say what I'm thinking all the time.
I know that you had said that you had already been working. So there may not have been much change, but what, if anything, did change from your life in a pre to sort of immediately post-pandemic world?
Definitely, like, I have my kids. So we are parents of 8 kids, 2 grandkids. And trying to help them navigate, you know, online school, something that they've never done, you know, and we've always considered ourselves very hands-on parents, but trying to navigate, you know, this tool that they've never had to use for education, trying to get my, you know, my older kids, especially my son, who's very social, to understand like why you just can't go out to the mall or why you can't go, you know, like trying to figure out how do we get them to be responsible in a way that, you know, makes sense to them without making them feel like they can't do anything. And so I think for us, that was for the biggest thing. I feel like now we have a stronger relationship because we've had to kind of like go all through those things together, where, you know, before the pandemic, I would have told you we had a strong relationship. But I think that really like helped us figure out, cause there were times where I would never, if my kids were like, I don't want to go to school. Like I got a headache. I'm like, suck it up, buttercup. You're going, take some Motrin and get out of here. Like where I'm working and they're like, I have a headache. I'm like, okay, I don't care. Email the principal and tell me you won't be logging on. Like just kind of that idea of what's important and what's not, I think is forever changed for us. You know, like before there are so many things that I was like, you know, we got to do it this way. Here's the expectation. Where now I'm like, that's not really that important. It's not as important as I thought it was.
How much do you think some of your younger children understood about what's been happening?
I kind of feel like they understood the best because they didn't really experience anything else. My daughter was in preschool 4 when actually at the end of preschool 3, when they shut down. So from that to, I'm sorry, I don't have any cash. Who? Oh, I can Zelle him 20. I can Zelle Tracy $25. I was going to give him $25. Okay. This is a perfect example of this. Like, me saying I'm going to be on a call in an interview literally means nothing. Because what else have you been doing for the last 2 years? So, yeah, she, you know, wearing a mask, you know, being separated, hearing the word, you know, COVID and like all those things are so normal to her, you know, to her and to my 8-year-old where they're like, her is the youngest. So I talk about her the most because I think that like all my other kids are grown. There's a huge age difference between her and my son, my youngest son. But even for him, you know, he's going in the 4th grade. So there was a time period for him where, you know, these things weren't in place. But I honestly felt like he had like a more, he was the one who would talk about it the most.
because he's at that age of like anxiety and question, where it's like, should I be worried about this? What can, is there something I can do about this? You know, where she was just like, I'm like, well, if you want to go, you got to wear a mask. She's like, okay, you know, whatever. I feel like my older kids were more, way more affected by it. The younger ones, I think that she could probably, if we could shut down again and she could, you know, she would hate not going to school because she likes to play. She probably wouldn't care about the schoolwork or life.
What were some of the reactions in your older children?
I mean, they get most of their information from their own, like, social circles. So, you know, it depends. Some, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you don't get that sick. What's the worst that could happen? Like, I have a son who has sinus issues and can sometimes have asthma attacks, like, literally out of the blue. So if the pollen level rises quickly, and unknowingly, he could, like, would have immediately have an asthma attack. So we were most concerned about him because we didn't know, like, how this would affect him. And so that was kind of like, hey, there are two things we're concerned about. We're concerned about Ruby, who's, you know, at the time she was 4, you know, because we don't know how this will affect her little body. And we're worried about because he is, you know, has these sinus issues and this weird asthma thing and, you know. So we are actually asking you all to help us protect them. You know, the rest of us, honestly, we're super healthy. I'm whole food plant-based. My husband's 90% whole food plant-based. You know, so we feel really healthy. Like, we always take, like, all the stuff that they were like, oh, take vitamins. Like, we were already doing all that. So we were like, we're as healthy as we can possibly be at this point. But these are our concerns. Like, even when it came to my mother, my mom is a widow. She's retired. She helps take care of our kids. So we have this period of time where we don't want her to be exposed. Again, my mom's the exact same way. She's probably 80% whole food plant-based. She is in excellent shape. but she's still 67. At the time, she was 67. And I was like, you know, we're just not going to be around Momo right now till we figure out what this looks like. But it got to a place where I could hear that she was getting depressed. And I was like, yeah, no. We're going to go hang out. We, you know, we came for a couple hours, you know, during the week. And then we started just having Ruby go for a couple hours, you know, a couple times a week. And then we went back and we were just like, here, there you go. Everybody's fine. because we weren't really going anywhere. We were the weirdos who are, we are extremely social people, but we also really like ourselves. So we didn't mind. Like, it was almost a little bit more freedom. Somebody telling me I can't go anywhere. Like, ah, darn, guys, can't come. like, you know, Instacart made it like we could order, not bring our food to our house, like, you know, ordering food. Like, it just, for us, just having an excuse not to go anywhere, especially after having so many kids where you're always on the go, you're always, always on the go, to having, you're like, you're sitting down, you're not going anywhere, was more refreshing to us. Where I joked, because my husband would always want, like, hope that they would lock us down again. He's like, man, think they're going to lock us down again. I'm like, they're not. He's like, they're the way they're talking. They're not. Like, I know you hope. You can always lock yourself down, honey.
What's marriage been like for you over the course of the pandemic?
Good. Honestly, we're probably an anomaly. We did go to counseling during it, but not because of anything pandemic related, because I think we got to a place where things that had happened over the course of the years were at kind of at like a fork. And I remember we went in there and we were talking about it. And one of the things is that I am the planner. My husband's the visionary. I'm the strategic operator. But if you know anything about visionaries don't like to hear about the obstacles. Visionaries just are like, here's the vision. Go make it happen. They don't want to hear like, okay, we need a plan and we were going to run into this problem. So I was like the party pooper. But because I was the planner, whenever my husband had an idea, he like would pass it off to me. So like the example that I use is that he wanted to join like this couple's bowling league. I was like, okay, fine. Join it. Let's do it. And so then, like, a week later, he's like, hey, I want to join, like, do this. And I'm like, I said, okay. Like, what's the problem? And by the third time, he's like, well, you just don't seem so excited about it. And I was like, I'm confused. Like, I said, okay. Like, I don't know. Well, he wanted me to reach out to the, like, the people to set it up. And I'm like, I don't have the bandwidth for that. Like, you had an idea, and then you handed me the idea, like, and expected me to do something with it. No, no, no. I was handing it back to you. And I was like, the whole time, I'm wondering why, like, you haven't done it yet. Because he thought he wanted me to do it. And so our pastor said, you know, did this start, you know, like, during the pandemic? And we looked, we were like, oh, no. I mean, way before then, like, they're like, did you guys, you know, get on each other? We didn't. We did it like it was, we got to spend so much time together because any outside influence of people wanting us to come out and do things, I was very involved in the community. And so I was on several boards and, you know, I worked late. I worked like 12-hour days. So, you know, we were often just like passing in the wind. So it was actually exciting for us to just kind of be around each other all the time. And that's why I said, like, him coming in and like that's like so normal for us, like him coming in and like going through my person meeting, like, what are you looking for? Like, he hears me talking. But because we were so used to just being around and operating in, you know, each other's spaces, that it's always been a mentality in our house that family comes first. And so if I'm doing like an interview or something, like, and they come in, they're going to hear about it later, but I'm not going to like be mean to them. Maybe my kids, they would get like because they don't want anything but like to know where the chicken nuggets are. But for him, he's not going to come in unless he actually needs something.
I'd love to hear more about your relationship to faith and like how access to things like your pastor may have changed due to the pandemic.
So you said my relationship to faith, right? Yeah. So I became a born again Christian at age 15. And I always tell the story that it was like a Helen Brimstone sermon, and I was just like, oh, well, I don't want to go to hell, so I guess I'll go up there. But never had any discipleship or knew, you know, like how to even read the Bible, because, you know, the only Bible I had was a King James Version. And I was like, I don't know what this says. And so nothing really changed in my life. I went off to college, and, you know, was living a life of a college student, but would go to church because the friends that I hung out with had been raised like in the church, like heavily in the church. And so even though we were like partying and doing whatever, they felt like it was important for them to go to church on Sunday. And my roommate's godfather actually had a church in Columbus. I went to Ohio State in Columbus, but it was boring to me. So I didn't want to go. It was long. It was like all day long. I was like, I need like the hour and 15 minute church. So, you know, about my junior year, I ended up getting saved again, where it actually kind of meant a little bit different to me, where I felt different, but still lacked the discipleship I needed. And I don't really feel like I got received that until I'd probably say like 2007. And I'm 44. So I would have been, I don't know, a lot younger than this. You know, early 30s, like 30, you know, 28, something around there. And so I started going to a church that really focused on that, focused on discipleship, and had like a bunch of different classes you could take. And I wanted to go to a Bible study. I remember that. Like, I wanted to go to Bible because I had no idea how to read the Bible. Like, I could read it, but I'm like, now what? And they started a women's Bible study. And up until this point, I would have told you, like, I don't get along with women. And I'm like such a tomboy. Like, I like sports. I like, I don't do hardly any of the things. And at the time, I thought that's what being a woman was about, right? Like, I knew I was a woman and, like, whatever, but being, like, a girly girl was about, like, getting your nails done, getting your hairs done, doing makeup, you know, going shopping. Like, those are girl things, that all things that I don't like to do. Like, I would get my nails done, but it was my natural nails. You know, other than that, I wasn't doing it. And so, and I'm not sensitive. I'm not a sensitive person. So calling me whining or complaining or crying about something where I feel like this is stupid, there's a very easy solution for this. Why are we having this conversation? I just wasn't good at that. But joining that women's Bible study actually showed me a different side of myself, that I actually was very, I may not be sensitive, but I'm very compassionate. So I don't always have to say something. I don't always have to give an answer. I don't always have to respond. I can see, you know, meet people where they are. That allowed me, those Bible studies allowed me to learn how to read the Bible and connect more. And so I then went it through like a discipleship course where there was, someone who actually discipled me over a period of time. During that time is when I believe my faith has started being tested the most, where I could hear the Lord ask me to do things and they could be something so simple. I was working at a private Christian school in Southeast DC, tons of like crime and homeless people. But the school was wonderful, still exists, still there. And I had coffee. We didn't have a coffee maker at the school. And so I would bring coffee in and I lived 30 minutes away. I'd bring Dunkin' Donuts on like a Tuesday, my coworker to bring Starbucks on Thursday. And so I had these two coffees. And I heard the voice of the Lord say, give that man your coffee. And I was like, he's homeless. Why would he want like a black Dunkin' Donuts coffee? And it's hazelnut. Like, he doesn't want this. But I was like, I know I heard what I heard. And if he doesn't want it, then maybe then it wasn't God. And it's fine. I asked him if he wanted the coffee. He said yes. And I gave it to him. And immediately, instead of feeling like, dag blast it, what am I going to drink? I felt this overwhelming sense of like, good job. Where it's just like this wash over you. It almost makes you want to cry. And I was like, wow, that's what it feels like when God tells you to actually do something, you do something immediately. Like, even when you feel like it's a sacrifice, right? It's a very small sacrifice. At the time, it felt huge because I was like, I'm not going to have coffee now. And I got to go talk to these first graders. But in the grand scheme of the things that the Lord has told me to do since then, it's very, very small. And so my faith began to get stronger that way, just, you know, hearing from the Lord, trusting that I heard from the Lord, doing what he said, and knowing that in order for me to keep that, be able to keep hearing from the Lord, that I needed to be able to read and understand what my Bible was saying. And, you know, I could read something this time last year, read the same thing this year, and it would speak differently to me. It's the same words, but it would speak to a different situation or a different, you know, feeling or, and it's very, very important to how I operate and how I interact with other people, you know, with just love and compassion and understanding, even when we don't agree, even when I feel like my values are being attacked. How to be able to respond to that in a way where it's just like, if you want to sever this relationship because you don't like my value, that's a choice that you are allowed to make. But do not misinterpret it as in like, I chose this value over you. You chose your value over me. And I'm okay with that. And I think I can be okay with that because of my relationship with the Lord and because I know that's where my values come from. They're not like arbitrary like values, but that they're mostly related and centered around the love for people that were created in his image.
I have so many follow-up questions. Are you willing to share an example of a circumstance where you found your values being intact and sort of how you met that moment with grace?
I'm trying to think of one in person. Great, people are nutso online. I think for people, when people know me, like people in person or people know me, they're a lot different, right? So they're not as like aggressive. But I can think of a time recently, and maybe just because my brain won't let me go too far back. Marie's like, why are you trying to do that? So I was on ABC National News. ABC did a special called Soul of the Nation in 2021, where they wanted to focus on the Black experience in America. And they aired 6 episodes over the course of 6 weeks. And I was asked to be on the faith episode that also included your biblical standpoint on abortion. And so I flew to St. Louis and did, these interviews that were phenomenal. And I think that they were phenomenal. I'm doing this interview with like Deborah Roberts, and they're phenomenal because after the interview, there's all these associate producers that are talking to me, and they're like, wow, you're like, I never thought about it like that. Like, you don't really hear that. When they aired it, they always do like a written piece. Anytime they air something, they do like a written piece with like a video clip. And I didn't tell people I was going to be on it. Like, I just was like, you know what, Lord, this came out of the blue, and you tell people what you want to tell people. But this isn't, I never wanted it to be an extra, to attribute it to something I had done, right? Like, look what I did. Like, that's not how it happened. Like, it was so strange how it happened that there's no way that I could even take any credit. And I wanted to leave it at that. But a year later, because of everything that happened since then, I really felt that I needed to thank the people that, encouraged me, ran alongside me and said, don't quit. Like, please don't go to Starbucks and, be a barista. Like, please keep doing this. It's my dream job, by the way. I just said, thank you. And so I'm tagging people in this, post. And someone I'm not even friends with, who is heavily involved in the pro-life movement, and he's a white male, like literally came onto my post attacking me because when she asked, do I think abortion should be illegal? My response was, I think abortion should be unnecessary. Now that it was like the phrase heard around the world. That was the thing that got people who normally wouldn't even like, because my, I run an organization that's called Pro Black Pro Life, would have dismissed me because of the pro-life part. Because of that phrase, they didn't. And so I was able to reach, women in my community because of the way, I phrased that answer, which was how I truly felt. I didn't think anything of it at the time. Like, I said what I felt. But I basically wasn't pro-life enough. And that I had missed an opportunity to say on national TV that, abortion should be illegal, where that wasn't what God doesn't call me to take opportunities to say, what I want to say. God calls me into rooms to say what he tells me to say. And so, it was people, my friends were coming on and defending me. And I seen the first post and he'd written on this rant and I said, are you done? And he said, no, I'll never be done, fighting against this whole life narrative. And I said, okay, well, take it up with Jesus. And that's all I said. Because at that point, like, you want to fight. I'm not going to argue with you on social media. I'm not going to spend my time typing in words to what you clearly don't want to hear. But I remember people, like, calling me and saying, the way you handled that, I couldn't. And again, all I said was, take it up with Jesus. Like,
you know, I'm not going to say, there's nothing, like, no matter what I said, he's just going to come back saying, like, things that didn't even address what I said. And they're like, you were just, I don't know how you just didn't rip into him. I don't, like, because there were people, now, that had board members coming on and responding very kindly, very graciously, but with 100% truth. But what I noticed, which was really, really strange, was that he would respond to the white females and the black males. But when the other black females would come on and say something, he wouldn't respond to them at all. He would just essentially just pretend like they didn't say anything. I had friends on that post who were staunchly pro-choice that came on and were just like, I really appreciate what you're doing. Like, I'm so proud of you. So what is the point of a movement, right? Like, if you cannot reach people on the other side, and not for conversion, right? For a moment of, huh, I never thought about that way. That's interesting. Or even so much to say, I love you so much, even though we disagree on this issue, that I can see the passion that you have for it, that it has to, you have to be called by God to do this. I appreciate everything you're doing. I appreciate you saying yes every single day, because if you got to deal with things like this, you know, like, and you keep going, like, I don't know if I could do that.
I talked to so many people with very different relationships to spirituality, many of whom feel they have this, like, very deep, intimate relationship with God that I hear you describing. Could you explain, in whatever way is available to you, what it's like to hear from the Lord to someone who might not have that experience, what that means to you, what it feels like?
Yeah, it's like hearing it's like seeing the sun coming when there's a thunderstorm. Like, it's like this moment where you're usually not even thinking about the thing he's speaking to you about. and that's why it's interesting, because this could be something you've been praying about. And now, you know, you're at the grocery store and he says, okay, do that thing now. And you're like, whoa, wait, what now? Like, it's never convenient. So, you know, when we think about hearing from the Lord, we think like, and people have, I've heard people say, like, they heard this, like, booming voice where they're like, it's like, no, I've heard the Lord say no, but it's never been like this booming voice. And it's also not my voice, which, you know, another thing I hear people say, like, yeah, it's the Lord, but it's like my voice. It's never my voice. And I immediately know that it's him, because it's uncomfortable. And it's either uncomfortable because he's telling me to do something he knows I don't want to do, or it's uncomfortable because he's affirming something and I'm just so overwhelmed with, like, you took the time out to say, yes, Sherilyn, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Keep moving forward. And sometimes it sounds like other people. And so I think the Lord talks to us all the time. You know, I think the problem is we spend a lot of time praying and talking to God that we don't actually be silent enough to hear what he says back. And a lot of times we already have our mind made up, where we're just looking for that affirmation, or we're like, come on, God, this is what I want to do. Come on, get on board to help me do this. Where, you know, learning what it's like to take direction from God, who has bigger and better plans for you than you can imagine, and trusting that, and saying, wait, like, this is the biggest I could imagine. And he's like, you're so small-minded. Like, I always joke, like, I'm so small-minded. Like, I just thought it was supposed to be this. And then it's this. I think that you can get the excitement in it. But then on the flip side of that, there are times when you're told no, right? When you wanted to say you're very excited about something, you're told no. And that's disappointing, because you're like, oh, I really thought this was the thing. Now what am I? Now I really don't know what I'm supposed to do. Now I got to wait for the Lord to tell me what to do next, right? And sometimes that's where I struggle, is that when I'm getting ready to do something, or when I'm waiting for an answer to do something, I struggle in that in between, kind of like, yes, I know you have my best interest at heart. Yes, I know what you have planned for me is better than what I could plan for myself. Yes, I know your no is better than my yes. Like, I get it. I don't want to feel disappointed though. Like, I don't want to have the feeling of disappointment. Like, that's what I'm trying to avoid of, you know, being those moments of sadness where like, dang. So it really, the biggest thing I can say is that, like, it's never convenient. You immediately feel uncomfortable, especially if it's something that you're like,